Welcome to another edition of Here's an Idea podcast. I'm Sherry Trigg, editor and director of content for Medical Design Brief. Here's an Idea is a podcast presented by the editors of SAE Media Group that showcases today's most innovative technologies. So treatments for neurological disorders such as epilepsy, Parkinson's disease, dystonia, and other neurological disorders often include invasive surgery to implant electrodes in specific brain regions to help control motor symptoms. But what if there were technologies that offered minimally invasive options while improving patient outcomes and reducing costs? Today I'm talking with Dave Rosa, CEO of NeuroOne, a company that has created an FDA-cleared combination system that includes both diagnostic and therapeutic capabilities. It offers the potential for transformative improvement in neurosurgery as the first known SEEG-guided radio frequency system that records and ablates nervous tissue. Dave, thank you for joining me on the podcast today. So brain electrodes have been used by scientists and researchers for decades. What are some of the technology advancements that have been taking place in this space in recent years?
Well, first, Sherry, thanks for having me on your show. I'm very excited to be here today to really talk about what's happening today and as well as what's in the future. So as you kind of alluded to in your opening, there have been changes in technologies to treat the conditions that you mentioned, in addition to other neurological conditions. And really, I would say over the past 5 to 10 years, what we've been seeing, like we have in other for other indications outside of neurological, is a desire by both physicians and patients to have less invasive procedures, much smaller devices that are being implanted in patients. So this reduction in invasiveness in terms of the procedure has definitely been an area of focus. And I would say even probably more so when you're talking about putting things in the brain. When you look at how surgeries were done, you know, one could argue that it's been pretty barbaric over the years, whereby neurosurgeons would have to remove the top part of a patient's skull. And not only did that not sound appealing, but what a lot of people don't realize is that it's probably been one of the biggest reasons why there hasn't been a greater utilization of some of the therapies that are out there. So I'll give you an example. When you mentioned epilepsy, half the patient population are adolescents to newborns. And I can tell you over the years in talking to parents, you know, they've been very reluctant when you have a child and you think that, you know, early on, you're going to have to put them through a very invasive surgery, like I described, they often hold off. There's a whole psychological impact to these procedures. I remember sitting in, it was one of the first presentations I sat in, and I think it was titled Psychological Effects of Brain Surgery. And I thought, you know, what are they really talking about?
Wow.
And there were pictures of adolescents that had you know, this very invasive brain surgery done. And when the skull plate or the top part of the skull healed, you could see ridges, visible ridges in the side of the patient's head. And you can imagine, you know, your high school student, you know, male or female, and, you know, you've got an obvious abnormality. You know, the whole presentation was really geared towards addressing the psychological impact of going through these surgeries. So having devices that are less invasive, and there's been a huge movement towards those, has become really one of the main areas of focus, along with making the devices smarter.
Mm-hmm.
The devices that we have cleared by FDA today merely record brain activity, which helps identify the problematic areas in the brain. But you also mentioned, our goal of providing electrodes that do more than just record, that, you know, have the ability to perform multiple functions, like ablation, like stimulation, like recording. And what that does is it reduces the amount of procedures that a patient has to undergo, which obviously would be a lot more appealing if you can go through one surgery versus, and one hospitalization versus multiple. So that's where a lot of the effort's been. And then the other piece that I would add is gene therapy and really the role of gene therapy and pharmacologic agents to treat these, because ultimately, if you can treat them just through an application, a gene therapy application in the brain, you might be able to reduce or at some point eliminate the need to implant devices, which obviously would be very attractive for patients.
Right, absolutely. So can you give us an overview of the technology behind NeuroOne's brain electrodes and how that technology works?
Sure. So the devices that have been out there for 50 years, the majority of them, and I'm speaking or referring to electrodes, have been primarily manufactured using manual labor. And what companies would do is they would place a silicone substrate, and then they would manually place these metal pellets, which are the contacts, on the silicone substrate. They would solder wires to each of these pellets, and then they would place a second piece of silicone over the top to seal the device. And that's a very labor-intensive process, especially when you're talking about electrodes that may have 64 contacts in it. There are some that are small that only have two, but the more contacts you're looking to generate, the higher the labor. And what we've done is use a process called photolithography. And if you think about photolithography the way you would think about a newspaper going through a printing press, there's some correlation there. So right. What we do is we start with a very, very thin film that's called polyimide. And then the machine etches, in essence, all the metal components that I said today have to be manually, placed. It mm-hmm. etches that circuit that really allows you to produce and manufacture a very consistent product. So very little hands touch the product. And really what makes this special today is that what we're talking about are film that are, or electrodes that are paper thin. And I mentioned a minute ago that invasiveness or reducing invasiveness is of utmost importance. You know, when you're dealing with something that you can roll up into like a tube because of its thinness and flexibility, it then begins to allow you, the potential to minimize the surgical procedure to place the devices. So that's what kind of makes it special. And really the reason why I joined the company was what I referred to a minute ago, and that is the ability to use one device to do multiple things. So today, there's a separate electrode that's used for more or less finding the problematic area, and then a separate procedure that's done to ablate the problematic tissue. There's a separate electrode that's used to perform stimulation to treat pain. What we're trying to do and what we intended to do was provide one device that you could place minimally invasively, but that could serve the function of doing both a diagnostic as well as therapeutic function. And all in an effort to really reduce the number of surgeries that patients have to go through, hospitalization costs, mm-hmm. and hopefully improve outcomes.
Oh, absolutely. That's just incredible. You alluded to some of the applications, but are there other applications of the devices that, both neurosurgeons and patients would benefit from?
Yeah, so the ones that are currently cleared for FDA treatment today are, you mentioned the majority of them. Back pain is also one. It's probably got the largest number of cases that are done each year for patients that suffer from lower back pain. And in those cases, they're using stimulation to basically prevent the neuron. So if you've got leg pain, the neurons travel up the spine and communicate to the brain saying, I'm experiencing pain. And what stimulation does is block those neurons from ever reaching the brain. So that's a current application. But the ones that I'm a little bit biased because I had a family member that that really suffered from Alzheimer's and eventually really died because of it. But when you look at that potential application and you look at the ability maybe to improve a patient's short-term memory by stimulating the area of the brain that controls that, the Mayo Clinic's done some work on that showing that there's definitely potential to improve short-term memory. Now, the challenge will be, can you develop a device that's minimally invasive or even non-invasive to be able to stimulate that area? And then the other one, which I think is a huge issue worldwide, is depression. And there's definitely data out there that shows that there's a potential to stimulate the area of the brain that controls moods. So that, you know, people that suffer from severe depression who really don't want to take medication, sometimes that, you know, that's supposed to address depression, but may cause more severe depression. You know, if you right. had the ability to block that signal from ever occurring, that would be pretty darn exciting. And there's work being done on that. So, you know, when you say, are there any other applications? I think depression and Alzheimer's are huge opportunities for technologies like ours to have a major impact.
That would be super exciting to see. Those are so prevalent in the news and in people's lives, everyone you talk to. So that would certainly be amazing. I'll switch gears a little bit. There's been a lot of buzz around brain-computer interfaces in recent years. Are the electrodes an important component of these devices as well?
They are. So when I was discussing our technology, I was more or less focused on, you know, applications for today. But, you know, companies like Precision Neurosciences and Neuralink, you may have heard about Neuralink because that's a company that Elon Musk started. And Precision Neurosciences, the co-founder of Neuralink, left and started that company and is a large investor in Precision Neurosciences. Those companies, obviously, I think the work they're doing is really critical to how these devices are going to be used in the future. And, you know, BCI, as I kind of refer to it, There's a definite role for electrodes, in there. And, you know, I many years ago, a researcher in the field said to me, when I started talking about more complicated applications, like, for example, paralysis, you know, his point to me was there's billions of neurons in the brain. And today's electrodes, you know, when you look at what at least are cleared with FDA, it's up to 64 contacts or points of contact in the electrode with the brain. And, wow. And, you know, his point was, what we really need is to have thousands and thousands of contacts communicating with the brain. So when you're talking about billions of neurons, you know, the challenge is, can we increase the communication to more and more an interaction, so to speak, with as many neurons as we can? And technologies electrode technologies like ours, if you go to any of the websites for the companies that I mentioned, you'll see, you know, mm-hmm. more contacts on a similar size footprint. that today has, you know, fewer points of contact. So I'll give you an example. One of our electrodes that today has only 16 points of contact, we actually went back into the lab and tried to determine how many contacts we could fit if we miniaturized them on the same footprint. And just in that one electrode, we went from 16 to 900. Now, there's a lot of work from a software and hardware standpoint that third parties would have to do. But the point here is, if you want to be able to treat these more complicated indications that companies like Neuralink, Precision Neuroscience, and there's many others, you know, that are out there as well, one of the critical pieces is we need to increase the number of points of contact in the brain. And certainly technologies like ours that, you know, that can miniaturize the contacts on a film are definitely going to be an essential element to being able to be successful in treating these more complicated conditions that you know, really BCI is targeted for.
Right. Well, you sort of just answered my last question, which was, where do you see the future of this space and NeuroOne's technology going? Do you have anything that you'd like to add about the future?
Yeah, I think in addition to what I mentioned, one of the areas that I touched on briefly was gene therapy. And one of the things that that our electrode is also intended to do, it's not cleared for this, but you know, I mentioned the importance of having a device, an electrode that performs multiple functions. One of the things that we're also capable of doing is using a current electrode that is on the market today, is placing that electrode in a specific area of the brain that some of these gene therapy trials are ongoing for treating or eliminating epilepsy. And the idea here is our device not only could allow you to deliver the drug through the center, but also monitor the effectiveness or the impact of this gene that's being delivered. And you might say, well, okay, that sounds more like a therapeutic application. But I think if you listen to what neurosurgeons tell you today, they are, you know, doing procedures that are still invasive. They're drilling, you know, through the bone into brain tissue. The future, if these gene therapies are successful or any other drug therapies, is instead of doing all those interventions, now what they would be doing is taking that patient and actually drilling, you know, one, maybe two holes into the brain using a device like ours, and then delivering the gene therapy to that point in the brain, monitoring, you know, the impact of that, and then sending the patient home a day or two later. So you may see a trend as we start to see some of these trials completed and getting a device, or I'm sorry, a gene therapy approved by FDA, you may start seeing an alternative form of treatment for these devices that may involve, you know, less implantable technology.
Wow. And all of that would be incredible. That would be so fantastic for the patients. Dave, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today and for sharing your innovative technology with our listeners. It all sounds so very exciting.
Well, I greatly appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about it. So thank you very much.
If you'd like to provide feedback on this episode or suggest future guests, please email me at sherry.trigg@saemediagroup.com. You can listen to this podcast at medicaldesignbriefs.com/podcast. Or on your favorite podcast app, such as Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thank you for listening, and watch for more coverage of exciting new technologies on Here's an Idea.